Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Writing the Rapids, the show where I, Joe Bilecki, talk to writers about writing. Very often those writers have been recommended to me by writers who have previously been on the show, or it's a rejoinder episode, which this is. We're once again talking to Shane Jesse Christmas, this time about the reissue of his book Latex Texas through Filthy Loot. We've also had him on to talk about his book Meth DTF, also through Filthy Loot, and he's also the author of Belfie Hell through Inside the Castle, Xerox Over Manhattan through Apocalypse Party, The Sex Shops of Sherman Oaks through Amphetamine Sulfate Press, and many, many more. Before we get into my conversation with Shane, let's remind you how you can help out the show for just $2 a month, patreon.com/noisemakerjoe. You get these episodes a little bit earlier and sometimes some other things too. You can throw me a one-time donation over at paypal.me, or you can buy my book. It's called Tired, and I think it's pretty good. Without spending any money, you can help out the show by liking and subscribing wherever you listen. Go ahead and leave some sort of latex-themed emoji, either on YouTube or Spotify, wherever you're listening. And of course, reblog, repost, retweet, tell a friend, that sort of thing. Now, without further ado, let's talk once again to Shane.
Latex Texas initially came out a couple years ago. Says so at the beginning of the book, through Selfuck, which is funny because it... YouTube pings me whenever I write that in the description. which is just hilarious. Back in 2021 was a limited edition of 50, which is what that's par for the course for Selfuck, right? That's handmade limited edition chapbook zine type things. Is that still around?
I reached out to Evan Isling, who was running Selfuck and who did a really good job, like fantastic job with that first 50 limited edition, hand stitched and all put together individually, and did a really good job on the actual layout. That was his idea. He came back to me and I was like, that's done a really good, fantastic job. So that, let's go with it. Let's publish it that way. But then I never really was like big on making it limited edition just for the fact of like being like a very highbrow thing or anything like that. I just think it was kind of that's what he wanted to do, and I appreciate making 50 is probably takes a lot of time. So I was like, I think that's probably one of the reasons as well. It wasn't like this sort of exclusivity type of thing arrangement. But just by the matter of fact, that's how it ended up being. People were reaching out to me over the years, last couple of years, just to say, have you got a copy for sale? And I've only got one copy, my copy. So I was like, I don't. And I didn't really know where the PDF is, but I could find that for you and send that to you. And people were like, no, that's fine. And there were suggestions from that, you should probably republish it. And I'm like, yeah, maybe. I don't. Sort of moved on to other things. And then the last person that did reach out to me said, that's fine. I'm going to hit up some people on Goodreads who have reviewed it and said it's, obviously if they want to sell their copy to me. So I thought that's interesting. And it was pretty much after, working with Ira at Filthy Loot, who, Ira asks me a lot, like, what's next? What have you got? Have you got a story? Have you got something? After publishing Meth with him. So I just very casually, as these things usually work out, very probably casually late one night, just texted him saying, would you be interested in republishing this in some way? Firstly, I wanted to also go back to Selfuck and, do it in the right way. Don't want to step on any toes or anything like that. I should circle back. I had asked Selfuck over the years if they were, do you want to do 50 more or something like that? Everyone was said, I'm not doing it anymore. It wasn't like a bad thing. It wasn't interested. He's just moved on doing other things in his life. So, and he said, oh, by all means, it's your book. Do what you want. I said, we'll redo the artwork, we won't just do like a facsimile of it, we'll come up with something else with Ira. Have you read Flunker by Dennis Cooper, or picked it up in some sense, looked at what it actually is,
No,
or flicked through it?
I don't think I've encountered that one in
Yeah,
person.
so yeah, it's Dennis Cooper's most recent fiction work, and Philip Best at Amphetamine Sulfate published it, who published one of my novels a while back. And if you listen to Dennis Cooper on a podcast or something like that, he'll talk about, how did it come about? Because it's a very slim novel. It's a slim collection of, I think, five short pieces. And when you hear Dennis on podcast talking about that, it was sort of like Philip was like, okay, well, because it was like, it's a thin book. How have you made it? It's a hardcover. How have you made this book? This thin novel or this thin collection of stuff, sort of like, how's it got a spine and a hardback and things like that. And so if you look at the book, it's got big, chapter one in, like 20-point font, and then there's, double, well, one and a half or double spacing in. So Ira came, said to me, he says, well, do you want to do it just as a chapbook, or do you want to do it with a spine and things like that? And I said, oh, I quite like books with spines and things like that. So the term we sort of used, going back and forth, is like, let's flunker it up. Like, he goes, have you read that book? And I said, yeah, I've read it. Yeah, of course I've read it. He's like, so we'll flunker it up a bit, and we'll make it, because originally it's like 30 pages, right? So we flunkered it up a bit. We got a spine, redid some artwork. I sort of wanted that contrast, which is for the original one, where the text is quite laid out, almost like an inside the castle kind of vibe to it. Whereas out of this one, I was like, let's just put it straight up as, a traditional sort of more traditional book. And so, if two people, for whatever reason, wanted to get both, it was something different for them as well. So yeah, that's sort of how it came about.
Okay. So that's one of the things I wanted to ask about was how you managed to come out with something that's 90 pages long. And there's my
Yeah,
answer.
we put some puffery around it. We puffed it up a bit.
I'll say it's not egregious. In terms of like, it doesn't look like you are trying to like fill space with it. Like it,
No.
which I appreciate too. I can't remember. There was a book I got a while ago that people were almost treating the way that people treated Infinite Jest at the time, where they were like, look how big the book is. And then I was like, these margins are huge. What is going
Yes,
on?
sure.
This book could easily have been 500 pages instead of eight or whatever. And, inside the castle t-shirt owner that I am, I don't really care how you lay out a book. But this does feel, I don't know, like it makes sense.
Yeah, there's not. So, yeah, probably. I mean, probably just for the point of telling the story. Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, didn't go to. Yeah, go over the ball over the top. We. Yeah, there's not. We didn't. Yeah, we didn't fill it with masses of white space and things like that. Though the font's only a little bit bigger. But yeah, I just think we wanted to sort of. The filthy loot is big on that thing, which is, put the book in your back pocket a little bit, and then. It feels like one of those, a little bit like a City Lights pocket, as a pocket poetry series book, where you can just, chuck it in your front pocket of your jeans or something like that. So yeah, that's how it came out. I mean, we could have, just filled it with like random, glitch, photos and stuff like that, and lots of, but we just didn't. We just were like, that's the length of the book actually is probably naturally the natural length of the book. Yeah.
Cool. I like that. And I do, I just in general like the size of this. I think like the dimensions, width and height, I think are about the same for Meth
Yeah, it's
DPF.
really easy to throw across the room when you get sick of it, and it's kind of quite aerodynamic.
I might, if I ever put out books of my own, I might steal these dimensions because I like them. With regard to the content of the book, One of the things I always come back to whenever I read your books, is like, how does he write like this? And I feel like the last time I had you on, I kind of said the same thing. And
Was I coy and not really answer your question?
No. I mean, writers talking about their writing, you know, it's one of those things where I think, you know, when your voice is effortless, that it is hard to explain what it is you're doing. I decided to flip through the other books of yours that I have because I wanted to look at things like sentence length or the use of ellipses or whatever. And the thing I found is that each book is kind of different in terms of like sentence length and variations and using dashes or ellipses or both or none. And I guess, you know, from there, do you kind of finish a project and you, as you're starting the next one, think to yourself like something subtle, like, oh man, the sentences were too short in the last one or something like that?
Less to do with style, but definitely sort of think about that. And that may come towards the end when I'm sort of trying to construct it all and put it together and go, what is this book that I actually have written, and try to make some sort of beginning and end and middle to it. But probably more things more like, what is this book going to be about? So with Believe It or Not, Sex Shops with Sherman Oaks. So it came off the back of Belfie Hell, which is a book with Inside the Castle, which has, you know, a myriad of characters. Mm-hmm. It's like probably way too many characters and lots going on. And then to Sex Shops with Sherman Oaks, where I was like, oh, actually, again, yeah, sort of not flip Belfie Hell, but I was really interested in two people and a relationship. And in my head, that whole time of writing that book was like, this, I'm writing a romance novel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think you would appreciate that a writer with their own style and how they write and their own obsessions, even though you're saying, oh, this is my version of a romance novel, that's kind of obviously not what, yeah, that might be what comes in, but that's not what comes out on the page. So, and I think, so that I probably got a bit obsessed with that, you know what I mean? Like in a good way, that your obsession. So that's been a bit of a through line from, Sex Shops. If you go the chronology, it's, you know, Sex Shops, This Latex Texas thing, and then Meth DTF. And I think, you're right. So I think I've just come to the end naturally. So I'm working on something at the moment, and I'm very conscious of sort of there's three books that have probably been about, you know, two people. And it's not a case of flipping it and go completely Belfie Hell, where I just bring in, you know, every rapper from the 80s and 90s that ever lived. But, like, it's just something, yeah, I'm very conscious of, I've got my own style. Mm-hmm. And perhaps less about the audience, but it's that writing through your obsessions. And I think maybe whatever I was like trying to work out, I think either I've worked it out or I've just gotten naturally bored with it, or a bit of both. So, but I think it's probably the former, right? I think I've just worked it out. And but definitely in terms of some stylistic stuff, I was kind of like, there's quite a few now. If you go look at these three sort of Dostoevsky wannabe books, and they are like very significantly different. There was a review recently, and I think they just read kind of the more recent stuff and were like, and not in a negative way, the review is actually very complimentary to the work, which was like saying, oh yeah, I am writing the same thing. And I was kind of like, well, I'm actually very aware of that because the last three things, and I'm including Latex Texas in that, is sort of very, it's just rooted in a lot of similar stuff. But like you said, the there are different things to each thing. And then location as well. You know, we're sort of, We're moving around the world. We're going sort of White Lotus style from different big, you know, capital cities.
I like the idea that you've been writing these romances. It reminds me of when the Mars Volta came out with their album Octahedron, and they're like, this is our acoustic album, and it's barely acoustic.
I remember when the Jesus and Mary Chain brought out their album Honey's Dead, and they said this is our hip-hop album. They'd been listening to a lot of hip-hop, and the beats are all very 808s and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing in there that, they would say, oh, yeah. But if you listen to it, you can actually hear a lot of sort of Terminator X, Public Enemy style rhythms, but it's clearly, it's another thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not, there's absolutely no raps on there at all or anything like that that would make you think anything about hip-hop.
Sure. One of the things I thought about, and this will tell you when I read it, I was thinking about, I feel like it was an episode of Severance that it was happening where you'd get like an establishing shot. The character's in the office and something would happen and you'd get a close shot on their face. And then you get the next shot would be a wide shot again and they're in a different place. And so maybe it was Severance, maybe it was not, maybe I dreamed it. I'm having the same thing with a bit of music. I can't tell if it was in the new season of White Lotus or if I dreamed it or what. And it's killing
me. Let's just say you dreamt it. That sounds good.
So now I have to make something that samples like a descending shepherd tones into like an electro beat. So that I can be the one who did it. But anyway, that sort of like filmic technique of adding surreality to it by showing you they're in a place, showing you what they're doing, and now they're in a different place. I feel like LaTeX Texas does that as well. This goes into another note that I took, which was the book does start out with the sentence, a good dose of LSD, to be fair. And thinking about when I used to drink, like there is this thing where it's like, I'm in my friend's basement. Wait, how did we get to the park? Why are we at a restaurant right now? Sort of thing.
Because you're, drinking, you also kind of very quickly go, let's not question that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's just like, all right, well, there's a delicious cheeseburger in front of me, so I'm going to eat it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked that sort of feeling out of LaTeX Texas. I always kind of, anytime I see that in a movie or a TV show, I always think, how could I write that? I would love to write that sort of surreal delirium sort of thing. And I feel like you did it to an extent here in this book that I appreciated an awful lot.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, definitely. I think it's in there's a book that I wrote called Napalm Recipe, Volume 1. And there's this sort of like weird, oh, well, not like weird, it's it wasn't my intention to write some sort of essay, but I sort of chucked in there about sort of, if you go there's some sort of answers hidden in that text about, sort of what, not my beliefs, this is going to sound very highfalutin, but like my ideas about writing and sort of what I might sort of be trying, and maybe I was just getting on the page to sort of focus myself into some sort of framework, but then it's like, how do you do that? So how do you actually write it, like the ideas I was putting down? So some of the ideas there were sort of, I just wrote that in that book. It talks about, I had this sentence, which is like, perhaps in a novel, you should write, jump cut narrative, right? Which is a bit of a, as you point out, it's a cinematic thing, right? It's really easy to do in a movie, right? You just sort of edit it. You insert and edit, or you can do it different ways, right? You can it changed the background or the scenery or something like that really, really quickly. But you can edit that back in as well. So, yeah, but how do you do that with words? And I mean, a lot of it is, I mean, I'm not saying this is what I do, but I mean, you have to kind of think about, well, perhaps that, is that collage? Is that sort of chance? You know, I think last time we spoke a bit about chance, right? So these sort of ideas and theories about constructing a novel a little bit, you know, because it's clearly, you know, I mean, I am getting closer to just writing things in a straight narrative from beginning to end. But in the past, I have sort of put it into some sort of SJX jumble machine and spat out something, right? Like, so, there's definitely, you know, in some novels, there's probably four different Word docs going on at one time, perhaps, and things like that. And then sort of going, okay, what's here and what's here? But people do that all the time. I mean, you know, not traditionally, but there is a thing where, you know, a lot of, I don't know if it's a thing with indie lit, but you see it a lot with writers, that their first kind of piece is either really a distinct set of short stories, so they will do a short story collection, or they'll sort of somehow shoehorn a bunch of short stories to have a similar through sort of plot line, so it kind of comes together. That's sort of a way of constructing a novel. So you can look at sort of some of my earlier stuff. Yeah, they are clearly like a bunch of short pieces put together with some sort of through line, and as I've sort of gone along, I've just somehow managed just to go, well, I'm writing a novel now, and I'll just, you know, I'll open the Word doc and I'll start and end, you know, in one place, yeah, and then craft it a little bit towards the end. I kind of think of my editing as like a bit more of, you know, constructing, and also, you know, removing a lot of stuff, so destructing as well. But yeah, so like all sort of editing processes really are, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. That feels,
I'm not going to pull the curtain too far back.
Each time because you're on, I'm going to get it a little bit more.
But John Treffery actually said to me once, he probably doesn't remember this, but he was like, yeah, don't, you know, you, like, don't pull the, yeah, his actual words were, don't pull the curtain too far back. And I don't know if he was, yeah, it was just, it was kind of, it felt like a throwaway line, but I was kind of like, you know, it's almost right. Like, I've, what's a film that you really, really love?
I've been thinking a lot about Only God Forgives lately.
Oh, God. I love that movie, right? I love that movie. That's a fantastic movie. But if you sort of like, well, the first time you watched that movie, you didn't know anything about the movie, right? You just watched it, right?
Yeah,
but you
just
could,
watched it.
But you probably don't want to, you can watch that movie and have this experience of watching that movie, but then you could sit there and listen to Nicholas Winding Refn, and he could talk about that movie, and we did this shot, and this is how we shot that, and this is how we put the, isn't there a scene where a hand goes into someone's chest and pulls out, you know, like, he could explain how you did that. So the next time you watch it, all you're really thinking about is, oh, that's how they did that.
Mm-hmm.
And that joy of actually, you know, cinema or the experience of cinema is some kind of lost. So whilst, you know, you're in the podcasting game and all that sort of stuff, and just, you know, some of your questions are like, how did you write this? And they're valid questions. I'm kind of like, well, it's kind of like, you know, and it's kind of, how do I write it? To me, it's not really interesting because I wrote it. But the questions I wanted to hear from people is like, what were you feeling when you read it? Like, right. So, and maybe a question to an author is, what were you feeling when you wrote it? Right. Yeah. So, because it's kind of gives some sort of interesting other context that I just never really hear from authors. So when I was writing it, I was like really like manic, or I was like going through like some sort of, you know, and I know there's that whole death of the author, so you probably shouldn't need to know that, but it's kind of, you know, I think how you did something's interesting. Probably why you wrote it is also a really interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to get his name wrong. but I read this book all the time. Yeah, the for a new novel by Rob Grillet.
I'm aware French, of it. So yeah,
butchered the hell out of that. There's one thing, you could read that whole book, and there's this one sentence that always jumps out at me. It's a little couple of sentences, and he's like, "Yeah, why did you write the novel?" And it's like, "Well, I wrote the novel to find out why I wanted to write the novel." And I'm just like, that's kind of like my go-to at the end. I'm like, well, why did I write that novel? What was I kind of like thinking about? And what did I, you know, these we're talking about obsessions. What are these obsessions that I kind of wanted to like really just work out? And that sounds like I'm doing it as some sort of self-help thing. But it's just like, I think you just, people are, you know, if people are naturally curious, they're just going to go, well, I wrote a romance novel about two people. And that's trying to talk about everyone. I don't want to say everyone, but you know when you have like these relationships, hopefully when you're a lot younger with someone, and it can be someone you're having like romantic relations with, or it could just be like a friend, and they're just really intense, like really intense. They're almost like, yeah, you bust up, yeah, you make up, you break up. But you really are intense, yeah. You know, you're almost like, you know, especially with a romantic relationship, you're intertwined and you do actually really care for each other, but it's very volatile.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you just probably can't be together. That's sort of, you know, that's sort of what sex shops, latex, and meth are sort of trying to unpack a little bit for me. Yeah. But not, and not saying that I think I've had that, but I'm not really thinking about an exact relationship. I'm just sort of trying to work out a relationship like that just in my head, like what does that look like? And you know, like, so that's how it's kind of jumps around a little bit. That's probably why it jumps around a little bit, so it is just a little bit volatile for the reader. And it again touches on these elements of delirium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, times in Latex Texas where it feels like Mike is inconsistent. He'll be like holding something and then it's something else. Or the protagonist kind of feels like they're being pulled around. And I guess, you know, again, with the sense of delirium and what I was talking about where, you know, the camera kind of shifts focus and now,
mm-hmm.
now we're in a different location. Yeah, I like that. I liked that feeling of exploring that. Like, I'm not really sure where we're going, sort of thing. But like, I know it feels like Michael has a plan for me, for us.
Yeah. Look, it's obviously, you know, sort of like, it's not a trick, but it's, you know, it's a bit of like, it's like a camera trick, right? It's to sort of do exactly what you've just said, right? Which is like, sort of hang on, what is real and what's not real. And, mm-hmm. you know, sort of like, I do like I've always liked unreliable narrators. Like I think that, you know, like there's just a lot to play with there. And yeah, the thing about writing a novel is sort of, if you're not sort of being entertained while you're writing it, then it's sort of, I feel like it's like, I get it. You know, there's probably writers that just plug in and, you know, and I love him a lot, but I just sometimes think, how does Stephen King just keep going, right? So, like, so, you know, if I'm sort of, like, entertained and almost, like, laughing myself hilariously, like, what? That's a word, right? But if I'm not laughing hilariously while I'm writing it in some sense at sometimes, then, like, I should probably just, like, really stop. Yeah, and so I think some of it is to sort of just go, like, I'm on a wild ride while I'm writing it as well. So, there's that. But I think it's just, really tying into unreliable narrators. So, you know, if I do like, I don't read them a lot because I'm always at rap, you know, it's kind of almost like pointless. But when I have seen a review or something, it is kind of like, you know, we didn't know what was going on. We're not too sure. Is this a person, you know, we're not so sure where we are. We could be somewhere else. It might all be completely not real. It could be completely real. It could just be very interior. Some of it could, you know, and so I just sort of, I like playing around with that. I like, you know, I mean, I think everyone sort of initially when they're quite young, not everyone, but, you know, like a lot of writers, I think, just do read a lot of horror and a lot of sci-fi. So I'd kind of like do like a time, you know, in its very essence, you know, traveling in time is kind of like sort of this thing that I do find interesting, not on any scientific level because I'm just too, you know, too dumb for that, but I just like it in terms of a science fiction trope. And then it's sort of like I always try to read a lot of nonfiction before, not before writing a book, but yeah, like I think, you know, reading a lot of nonfiction for a fiction writer is very healthy because you talk about obsessions. Like I can sort of pinpoint the nonfiction stuff I was reading at the time of Sex Shops or sort of around here. I mean, I was really big on reading. There's a book about, you know, everything is, you know, there's a classic book of not the genre but of the theory about, you know, it sounds quite quaint to say it, but like the universe is a hologram, right? Now I don't really care about that. I don't necessarily believe in it or anything like that, but I think it's a bit of a dumb idea. I think there's some actual validity to it, but in terms of I like it as a dumb idea to put it into that, you know, maybe that's something's going on with Michael there. Or and I don't really explore that. Like I'm not writing a treatise in my not fiction writing about the universe of hologram. Pretty much all I've just said is probably the bit of the idea that it gets in there, right? It's like, oh, you know, what is real? Like, so that sounds like a bit of a stoner. You know, like, what is real? Like, we're going to sit around my parents' couch, brown couch, thinking about what, you know, what is reality and what is time. But like, in terms of maybe just tricks and tropes. I'm not talking about my own tropes. I just like playing around with, you know, that unreliability.